Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity in the highway to north, this is Safety Wars for Thursday, January 30th, 2025. How's everybody doing out there? Well, this is a pretty somber day we have with what went on last night. I mean, it, to say the least, it sucks. And we hear, hopefully, you know, so there was news coverage throughout the day, and one person said this, another person said this, and another person said yet this, and then you had finger pointing. You had all this stuff going on here. A lot of different stuff going on. So we're going to try to put some, make some sense. Get the headphones on right here. Make some sense out of this whole thing. I don't know what else to do other than make sense out of things that are not, don't seem to make so much sense. Then we're also going to figure out what it all means, right, for our organization, for our, for everything else. It is what it is. And we're going to talk a little bit about human organizational performance and how do I go about investigations, because we learned this week with one of our clients the importance of paperwork, very, very, very important, and how you conduct a investigation, very important, especially if you think there's going to be litigation later on. So, you know, it is what it is, and we'll figure things out. We're getting there, we're improving, and we're learning, and we're improving, and everything else. Now, behind me, I'll move the on-air. We got Mr. Snowman there in the background. And for whatever reason, we have this. You've seen it. Jenga. So for you people listening at home, we have on our studio, we have a Jenga puzzle or stack. And in case you're not familiar with it, you're not Gen X, right? This came out probably a long time ago, but it became popular. First time I've seen it was in, I believe it was in, I could be wrong, in college. Late 80s, early 90s. And in the mid-90s, we had a lot of fun with it, believe it or not, at church events. And so we would go and, you know, good, clean fun. We played Jenga. And then we'd, you know. So what the idea is that you take a block out of the bottom without flipping things over or dropping things. There you go. I dropped them. Right. And then you take successive blocks and you put it on top. And eventually the Jenga falls and whoever is the last person to remove the block, right, loses when it tips over. Whoever, right? So it's fun. I mean, you know, there are variations with this. So, early 20s, now maybe alcohol involved, what have you, all different things. Now, why do I bring this up? My question is this, and if you've taken any of Todd Conklin's courses and any of the other HOP courses that we offer here at Safety FM, the question is, what block knocked that over? Think about it. What block knocked it over? Was it the first? Was it the last? Did the first start putting you on that path to that? Because from what we saw yesterday and from all the commentary we've had throughout the day from everybody, well, this person is lame. This person is lame. This person is this. This person is that. This person is, the whole nine yards we've gotten here. And the reality is this, blame, like human organization performance, the principles, blame fixes nothing. Human error is normal. Learning is vital. Context drives behavior. And how you respond to failure matters. All of that stuff matters. Why do I bring any of this up? And the FAA, believe it or not, historically has taken on a lot of these human organizational performance principles and modern ways of going about things with this to get to the bottom of it. And we hope that they do. And I wanted to send out our condolences here to the victims here and the people who died yesterday. So I don't think we're going an hour or two today. And we may talk a little bit about politics here, but only in the context of this. So who's to blame, the first or the last? Based on what I'm seeing today on the news, right, they're blaming, well, the air traffic controller and the pilots, oh, they're to blame. And guess what? We're dealing with a whole system here. The airline industry has redundant controls. So let's back up. And what our question is this, all right? What our question is this. How do we define safety? Safety, that damn zero accident sign that we see outside industrial facilities, warehouses, shopping clubs, large scale. Is that it? Because I tell you what, if our vision of safety is zero accidents, zero illnesses, zero injuries, zero environmental events, that's your definition of success. We're not going to be successful. Why? Because you're dealing with humans. You're dealing with human error is normal. There are error rates. People come in, and I've heard all different anecdotes over the years on air traffic controllers, how they have to keep focused and everything else. It's the whole system that goes in there. And if you think that because you have no accidents, now you have a safe working environment, we know that's a bunch of baloney because we heard all about near misses and everything for all day here that they've had recently. Right? I don't know if that's true or not, but this is what the news is reporting that haven't been resolved. That's the other thing. So if you have zero, that means that everything's safe. We all know that that's a bunch of baloney. I could use the words the president used today during the press conference. It's all a bunch of baloney. So the idea is that you have safety is not zero. Your safety is capacity, your ability to do stuff, and resilience, your ability to adapt, adaptability. Right? So airlines have a lot of capacity into it. But the question is, at what point when they talk about root cause, which is baloney, many root causes here. So here we have, and this is from the U.S. Sun. Erie report warned of a catastrophic crash 3 years before D.C. tragedy amid claims the control tower was short-staffed. Pardon me. I'm not going to be an apologist for the administration here. That's not what this is about. This is about what we can learn here and how can we apply it to our own organizations. So Erie report warned of a catastrophic crash risk 3 years. This is from an article from Forrest McFarland, right? Air traffic controllers issued Erie warnings of catastrophic crash risks years before an explosive mid-air massacre claimed 67 lives. An American Airlines plane collided with a Black Hawk in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday morning, evening, fulfilling the dark predictions of FAA workers who internally reported dozens of near misses and warned a fatal crash was only a matter of time. And Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said an elevation mistake saw the U.S. Army operated helicopter flying into the pathway of a plane during a training exercise. The plane, which was coming from Wichita, Kansas, shattered into three pieces and sank under the ice-cold river waters before 9 p.m. No one survived here. And, I mean, list the victims here. They have. It's, right? They have some of them here. I mean, you know, sports teams. This happened one other time with Olympic skate team back in the 1970s. Here we have an Associated Press. 14 from figure skating community killed in a plane crash, six of them from one club in Boston. You saw the Nancy Kerrigan, the famous ice skater, silver medalist, a breakdown today. You can really feel it in her emotion on this. We also have, I lost the stories here. Hold on. The control tower was understaffed. That's another report. This is from Forbes magazine. A preliminary investigation report into the crash that occurred between a commercial plane and a military helicopter reportedly showed the air traffic control tower staffing level at the Ronald Reagan National Airport, where the passenger's jet was headed, was not normal for the time of day and level of traffic. And they give a timeline, right, with this. And theory, you know, they're all over the place. Now, President Trump issued a executive order right on January 22nd. That was 8 days ago. I won't go into word by word. Right, President Donald Trump ends DEI madness and restores excellence and safety within Federal Aviation Administration. I probably should download that one. Hold on. Be a good idea. Save. All right. This met presidential memorandum orders the Secretary of Transportation and FAA Administration immediately stop DEI hiring programs and return to non-discriminatory merit-based hiring, which is what President Biden had recommended on November 13th of last year. It also requires FAA administrators to review the past performance and performance standards of all FAA employees in critical safety positions and make clear that any individual who fails to demonstrate adequate capability, is replaced by someone who will ensure Americans' flight safety and efficiency. And again, restoring merit, That's what. Why do I mention this? I'm not an apologist. I'm just saying, we're going to deal with fact here, not innuendo. I'm reading right off the government website. Nothing was updated today. Yeah, there were two options on here, and you know, the president was blaming DEI practices, and he had read articles off the FAA website, which have now been, I believe, scrubbed. I haven't been able to find them. If you have a link to them, please send them on over to me. I'll put them right on the air on this. But he quoted people who would normally not be qualified or disqualified from safety critical positions. For example, they have a diagnosed mental illness and things of that nature from that job. Allegedly, you know, I haven't been able to see it. And all this finger pointing, and you get the finger pointing, whether pilots were, and this isn't from the administration, but from the commentators, pilots were at the wrong height, they didn't listen to this, does nothing. So what I'm going to suggest is that everybody go, take a chill pill here, let everybody mourn this, and they get to the bottom of it, exactly what it is, like the FAA does. Now we're going to discuss for probably the remainder of the program how to conduct an accident investigation at your workplace. One way, a lot of different methods, but we're going to go to commercial break and we're going to discuss that. And by the way, if you need help, I helped someone with an accident investigation today over the phone. I couldn't be there. It was for long. They wanted to have some questions. A good safety person involved, but he wanted to get my input. I did that remotely. So we are going to go to commercial break.
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars with your host, Jim Posel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
In an unpredictable world, one voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Posel, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all with his engaging storytelling. Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Posel and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars. Your safety is our mission.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Posel and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It's definitely, it will take some deep dives in some information that you might be interested in.
Is your safety training old, stale, and hackneyed? Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that is designed to actually address and assess your hazards and liabilities and is not standardized baloney from generations ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call me, Jim Polzel, at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you are receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces. We are back. So how do we... Sorry about the pause. I had to handle something. My wife is away, going around and raising money for her charity shoes. But, so I'm here. She's been in Dallas a lot. All right. By the way, if you don't listen an hour or two, this is that's no. I have song Matrix cutting into hour two, and that is Western Adventure coming in. Now, how do you do this? How do you conduct an axe investigation? There's all different kinds of ways you could do it. Now, you could go, and I almost threw myself off the air here. Hold on. You could go to the OSHA.gov website here, and let's see, I'll share that. I didn't know you could do that. Wow, okay. Finding out new things about this program all the time that we're using. And so there you are on the OSHA website, right? And just to let you know, the apparently management's not in place yet, and you go here, and there are no news releases. So we're going to type in. I've never really gone into this here. OSHA 300 form, which needs to go out very, very soon. If you need help filling this out, I've been getting phone calls all day, ringing off the hook. From people help asking me for help to fill this out. Blah, 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 blah. So the OSHA 300 form is a log of work-related injuries and illnesses from the previous year. Right? And it needs to be posted February 1st to April 1st. No fooling there. Let me make sure I have my dates right. I'd hate to do that. So they give you an instruction manual here that explains to you how you're supposed to fill out this form. How you classify injuries and illnesses. If you're on the audio portion, I'm sorry about this. Do you have to send these forms to OSHA at the end of the year? Many employees are required to electronically submit the information from their Form 300A and summary to OSHA, Form 300A summary to OSHA. It gives you a link here. Teaches you how to calculate the incident rate. Explains to you how to fill out the log. So you do not post the log. You post only the summary at the end of the year. But I can assure you that if someone, OSHA, comes, they're going to ask for stuff here. All right. And hold on. probably did it, should have done the whole thing. So I'm sorry, I was wrong here. From April 30th, for February 1st, April 30th, on there. All right. Am I right on that? Yes or no? Yes, I guess so. And if an employer has no... blah, blah, blah. All right, here it is. Why did I say March, April 1st? I don't know why. I was wrong on that. It's April 30th. April 30th. I know, that's a amateur mistake. All right. And that's what you have on there. And now, OSHA's Form 301. This injury and illness incident report is one of the first forms you must fill out when a recordable work-related injury or illness has occurred. Together with the log of work-related injuries and illnesses and the accompanying summary, these forms help the employer and OSHA develop a picture of the extent and severity of work-related incidents. Now, this is important here. This is very important, especially when you are dealing with a general contractor or a host employer that demands the investigation be done within by the close of business. OSHA says you do not have to do that. You have to have this. It's a made-up requirement. OSHA's 301 incident and illness report. Within 7 calendar days after you receive information that a recordable work-related injury or illness has occurred, you must fill out this form or an equivalent. Some state workers' compensation insurance or other reports may be acceptable substitutes. To be considered an equivalent form, any substitute must contain all the information asked for on this form. You must keep this form on file for 5 years following the year for which it pertains. If you need additional copies of the form, you may photocopy, print out, or insert additional forms. So here we have. This is what OSHA requires you to submit. The full name of the employee, the street, their address, their date of birth, the date hired, whether they're male or female. Information about physician or healthcare professional. If treatment was given from the worksite, where was it given? The facility, the street, the city. Was the employee treated in an emergency room? Was the employee hospitalized overnight as an inpatient? If it was, if that's the truth, then therefore you better have made the report to OSHA. Case number from the log, the date of the injury or the illness. The time the employee began work, the time of the event, what was the employee doing just before the incident of the report, what happened, tell us how the injury occurred, what was the injury and illness, what object or substance directly harmed the employee. Examples, concrete floor, concrete, radial arm saw. This question does not apply to the incident leave of blank. If the employee died, when did death occur? That's what you required here. Now, whatever accident forms you're required, you're right. This is what OSHA looks for. So what often happens, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but what often happens is employers, OSHA asks for a report. This is the report they give them, not anything else. I'm not saying right or wrong. That's often what happens. Now, you would think that people would say, well, that's all that has to happen here. All right? That's all that you need to do. Not all that you need to do. You have to do a full-blown accident investigation. And there's a whole series of questions you need to ask. And I'm not going to be showing this form here because it's proprietary. But basically, this is what you do. You have to get, you have the, most of my organizations I deal with, they require a report immediately. Absolutely immediately. And You know, just, hey, this is what it was. It's like a 1,000-mile overview on what happened, where it happened, photos, that sort of thing. That's normally done by the close of business. That's the best you can do. And then the following day, so let's say this is a normal shift, right? So the, you know, and this happens, close of the day. And if we can do it a little bit quicker than that, we try to do this. By the close of the day, we have that 20, that form out. Usually, if the person has to go off site, then we have a longer form that we use. And it's like, okay, why? Now, what's the longer form? And it guides our investigation. So you have, obviously, the name of the people that got hurt, the company, the date, the time, who did the interviewing, and everything else. Now, I tell people it's very important to list the time, not only according to OSHA you have to, but the time of the incident with that. Why? Because that's going to determine your 24-hour threshold or your 8-hour threshold on that. If someone dies, reports to OSHA with 8-hour, 24-hour threshold on that. What time did the incident occur? Approximately 9:45. Right, in the one I'm reading off of. What day of the week did it occur? On a Tuesday. Right, for example. How long had the victim been working on the day of the incident before he or she was injured? What was the individual working overtime? What shift did the incident occur on? When did the shift start? And how long had the victim worked on his or her particular job in days, weeks, months, or years? So this gives you a little bit of context. Now, on this investigation that they're going to do on the airline, I assure you they're going to have a timeline on a spreadsheet, usually an Excel spreadsheet. What happened that day, right, with that, this to every person on there. And I guarantee you they're going to be talking about fatigue. Fatigue of the pilots, fatigue of the air crew, fatigue of the air traffic controller. Were they working overtime? What was their context? All that stuff goes in there. Why is that important? Because there's certain regulations that they have where for amount of time they're allowed to fly, anything else that happened prior to what was going on there to every person, the best that they could tell. Did the person have an argument with their spouse? Did they have a death in the family that day? Now you put them in on a plane. I'm not saying any of this happened with a plane crash, but these are the types of things that you ask. I was on a project where we went back on the timeline 6 months, and it was determined that the person that got hurt, he had worked for 6 months without a day off. Do you think fatigue set in at that point? Maybe a little bit. And that was part of one of the things that we came up with, was one of the root causes. The guy was made a bad decision because he was tired. Right? With that. They don't like when you do that. Right? I asked him, do you want a real accident investigation? Or do you want to, what do you want? One pager? One pager is what we saw, that OSHA 301 form. You want that? Okay, I can make it out and I'll send you a bill, but no, we're going to do an accident investigation. Then you're going to list who was injured, who witnessed the incident, who first responded after the incident occurred, who supervised the victim. Has the victim done the same job before? Who trained the victim at the job? Who installed the equipment? Who provided maintenance on the equipment? Who inspected the equipment? When the equipment was last inspected or maintained? And who told the victim to do the work he or she was involved in at the time of the incident? That's important. Why? If someone else told the victim to do that, to do X, Y, and Z, now we go to the supervisor, to the person who told him or her that when they got hurt. And also it deflects, there's a liability thing. It deflects liability away from you. Because believe me, when you get sued, What's one of the things on there? You, the safety guy, told him or her to do X, Y, and Z. Been caught in that trap. I don't like that being caught in that trap. So I always try to make sure, well, who directed the work? Who was in charge? Who was the competent person? Something else that's in here is, how did the person get the job? Because that comes into it. Did you get the person out of the union hall, where you call up the union hall, and then the union hall sends you? Who did they send you? Or is it a situation where, and this happens at a lot of companies, especially family-owned companies. Owner's child gets hired and now is a supervisor, and he or she never did the work. The most successful family-run operations, my experience, is when the owner hires their child and then sends the child into the field to see on the sharp end of the stick, see how the work is done. Start them from the bottom. Just my experience on that. Right. Now here is, where did the incident occur? Where was the victim at the time of the incident? Were there any witnesses? Where was the supervisor? Competent person. What happened? Right, now we talk about what happened. What was the victim doing? If this was not the victim's regular job, what was his or her regular job? We're trying to find in the Jens Rasmussen safety modes of work. Where are we on this? If possible. And now, what were the conditions on the day of the incident? Was the victim working in a crowded condition? Was there anything different or abnormal the day of the incident? Was the job understaffed? Right? That's what they're saying about the plane crash. Don't know if that's true or not. Was there more work to do than normal on the day of the incident? Were workers asked to work overtime? Had anyone else ever been involved, injured, doing the same job? Had there been any near misses on the job like this? Ding, ding, ding. With that. Had concerns about the safety of the job, piece of equipment, environmental condition been raised with management previous to the incident occurring? Apparently, yes, in this situation. What language does or did the victim speak? What language does the victim's supervisor speak? What kind of PPE? And I have a whole list of questions on PPE. And this is where we start. Right, because part of the thing is, yes, we're trying to correct situations there, but it's also a liability thing. If you think you're going to be sued, you only really have one opportunity to collect this information before everyone's going to be lawyered up. I've been on jobs where a person gets hurt, they take the person to the hospital, and their attorney is waiting at the hospital for them, lawyered up. I've seen it already. With that, now, what do we also do here, right? And this is, and then it figures up questions, asking questions, putting together a timeline, right? How did they get the job? What's their training? What's their education? How did they get to the job? That's another one. Well, what do you mean, how did they get to the job? Well, did they start the job, leave their house at 3 a.m. in the morning to work at 7 a.m. and then work a 12-hour day? Fatigue. Do they have anything else going on in their life? We're trying to add context to this. We're not trying to blame anybody. Now, how do we apply human and organizational performance on here? So there are five principles of HOP. Number one, human error is normal. So when I see an accident report coming back to me, this was human error. What do I normally say? Yeah, no groove, no, it's human error. And often the extent of the report well, so-and-so did X, Y, and Z. That's where we get into blame fixes nothing. Okay, I understand a human error is normal. Blame fixes nothing. And if they say, well, now my next question is this. Well, why was there human error in here? What's the context? Why wasn't this job set up so we could fail safely? Meaning, you're relying on one thing to go wrong, or one common thing can go wrong, and now all of a sudden you have an accident? That doesn't seem exactly safe on that. Right? Where you're relying on heroic measures by one person. How many jobs have I been on and have you been on where one person is out that day and the whole place turns to crap? Right? And this is always, how to blame the worker. The worker is to blame. The worker makes bad choices. Safety is the, right? Absence of incidents, a reliance on heroic acts and the individual. Bad actors exist. All that goes in there. And that's what traditional is. And we can't got to get away from that. Learning is vital. Most managers do not know what goes on in the field. Our manager is willing to learn what happens in the field. So if you're an accident investigator, right, you can insert yourself a manager. Try to figure out what's going on out there. Don't assume, oh, I did this job 20 years ago. This is how it's done. No. Why did this happen this way? Explain to me what, because we're going to try to prevent another accident. Context drives behavior. This is the old-fashioned work as planned versus work as completed. What is your context? What is the mindset? Why did that? I'm sure most workers, it seemed like a good idea at the time that we would do this. Were you rushed? Because this is also what happens. We're on an accelerated schedule for this. Okay. Well, blah, blah, blah. And you hear, and then all of a sudden people start to rush and they start to skip steps. They start to not put on PPE where it's required. They don't look at a job and assess it and say, hey, this is how we have to do this thing. And this is how we set up our work area safely. Do we have the right equipment? That's what all goes into rushing. What's the context? Is the person actually trained in doing that job? Are they on autopilot? Are they not on autopilot? Are they in the skills mode with low attention span and high familiarity? Do they have to make decisions all the time? Because I tell you what, if you can't set yourself up to be highly familiar with the job and with a low attention span, now you're going to be having to pay attention to what you're doing every time. And now you're up in the rules-based thing where you're going to be making decisions and following procedures, doing this, doing that. When you start to get into a situation where you're always making a mistake, you're going to have more errors. And is the worker in that situation? Is these airline pilots, right? Planes are designed, systems are in place where if one thing fails, the whole thing doesn't turn to Groovino. So for this situation last night to occur, I can assure you it's not only one thing that went wrong. It was multiple things that went wrong here. But on the other hand, there are multiple things that went right also. I'm sure. Multiple things go right every day. And there's no accidents. We had a good stretch of no accidents in the airline industry. No major accidents. There are accidents, but no major accidents. All that goes into it. Right? Now, and that's what it is. So if you're always making decisions and everything, the maritime industry is famous for this, where they have to consider if you're a boat captain or a pilot or a helmsman, whatever, a million things are going on at one time and you have to judge everything. You think you're going to make a mistake? Eventually you will. The pilots, the air traffic controllers, You think they're going to make a mistake? Absolutely, especially when they have multiple things going on at all times, and they're right there in that rules-based mode. And how you respond to failure matters. I can tell you, with the administration and being a developer, the president acted like you would see a developer act when there something goes wrong and with the accidents. I'm not saying right or wrong, but this is often how a developer acts until things shake up, a general contractor acts here. Playing political games and things of that nature. I don't think that politics is where we need to go here with this. We should do an in-depth investigation, find out and get to the bottom of things. Right. And I tell you what, if God forbid these people were not qualified in what they're doing and that someone put them in that position, I think there's going to be hell to pay here. On the other hand, they may be perfectly qualified and something else might have failed here. There are airline consultants all over the blogosphere, the internet, and on TV today talking about what could have gone wrong and speculating on this. And I tell you what, know what I learned? I learned there's a whole shitload of stuff I don't know about air traffic stuff. So if it were me and on airline safety, so if it were me doing this and I was heading up the investigation, I would go out and I would try to find out all that I could, do a learning team, try to figure out all that's going on. And that's what you should do. If you're not familiar with how way work is done, don't investigate. No, don't write a report on it. Go and find out how the work is supposed to be done. Oh, and by the way, if you think, well, the worker won't tell me how the work is done, guess what? Most workers take pride in what they're doing, and they will tell you what's going on because they're the experts in what they do. So what do you do with this? Some of the other paperwork that you need. I'm sure they're going over checklists, they're going over training records, and may even be going into the when they fabricated the plane, building the plane or the helicopter. Everything in there with that to see if there was some type of mechanical failure. Doesn't look like there is right now, but you never know. I would go and look into that. And I'm sure they're scouring the internet right now with anything these people put on the internet. So what do you do? A lot of stuff. How do we apply human and organizational performance to things, right? Well, let me back up. How you respond to failure matters. What do you do? You go and look at Jody Fisher, the PR podcast that I was on a while back, or you can read Todd Conklin's When the Worst Things Happen. This is what you do. Very simple. Hi, my name is, so let's make believe that I'm doing this. Hi, my name is Jim Pozel. I'm working for X, Y, and Z company. We were contracted, or I was hired to do the axe investigation and everything else along with it. And this is what we know happened. There was a plane crash in Potomac yesterday. It collided with a helicopter. We had approximately 60 people. We're trying to verify that right now. Souls lost. We have recovery efforts underway. And we are going to be looking into this. And we're forming a investigation team here with this. We're going to get to the bottom of this so we can try to prevent another accident from happening like this. But first, we had to gather information and do the investigation. So what did I do? I told you who I was. This is what we know. Right now, what we don't know, we're doing an investigation, and that's what we're doing to find out. We're doing an investigation. Right. Well, and you leave it at that. If you start to gab on, and I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of regrets here with the people in power saying this happened and that happened, now you can't dig yourself a hole. So how do you set up this? So I told you, showed you how to do an axe investigation, how to communicate. And if you can, you have somebody qualified to do the communication. Now, how do you control your people? If you're dealing with a high, profile incident like they're dealing with here, you tell those people everybody keeps their mouth shut. You go through the proper channels for communication. Because this is what happens. You get people, and I shared this story one time before here. And this may sound a little bit misogynist, but this is actually what happened. Reporters already have the story written. They're often just looking to attribute someone to that story. Well, it is. So this actually happened on one of our projects. There was an I think it was over 25 years ago. There was a major accident, had to do with a maritime spill and fire and explosion at an oil terminal. And this oil terminal, not there anymore, was in Staten Island, and the response company was staged in Woodbridge, New Jersey, in Sea Warren, Woodbridge section. So I went down there, saw what was going on. And one of the people on the job was approached by a very attractive young reporter, right, from the local news. And this employee had the reputation of hanky-panky. Leave it at that. You're an adult. You can figure that out. And she shoves the microphone and a camera. Cameraman shoves the camera in his face. And she starts goading him on and leading him on. And in his mind, man, I might have a chance with this reporter. This young reporter. And he's about 45 years old. Has a, dirty, smelly, cleaning up an oil spill, still has his PPE on. Well, what have you heard there? And it went on and on, and he mentioned a whole bunch of stuff that wasn't even true. That was rumor, innuendo, and hyperbole, and stuff that he made up. That they were pulling bodies out of the river and all this crazy, crazy stuff. And what do you think made it onto the evening news at 11 p.m. news, all of this stuff? Put everybody in a real bad situation. So it's important that as when you're dealing with this, that only one person or two people deal with the press. You go over what I just said, especially at the beginning, and that's it. You start to talk more and more. Now you have problems. This is and then what happens? Conspiracy theories. The conspiracy theories already came out today. Well, there were people on that plane were VIPs, and this, how do we know this wasn't a targeted hit? Really, Jim? A targeted? Yeah, that's what we heard this morning on this. That's about it. We're going to go to another commercial break. Let's see if we can wrestle up some more news here, and we'll go from there.
Come and listen to a story about a man named Jim. Safety's his game, and the odds were looking grim. Workplace hazards everywhere, from ladders to machines. He took on the mission to make those places clean.
Safety, that is. PPE. OSHA rules.
Well, next thing you know, old Jim's in high demand.
teaching folks safety from the mines to the land. Said we gotta keep them safe, make sure they know the score about hazards and the dangers that they just can't ignore.
Training, that is. Inspections. Safety plans.
So now they call him up. Safety Wars is here to stay. Fighting the good fight, keeping dangers at bay. Tune in and learn with Jim. He's got the safety know-how. Because Safety Wars is on and we're starting right now.
Okay, so this just came out with his airline crash right at airtime at 7:55 p.m. Here you go. Night before the and this is off of Fox News. Night before DC crash, another airliner nearly collided with a helicopter, according to a report. The night before, American Eagle Flight 5342 collided with an Army Black Hawk helicopter near Reagan National Airport on Wednesday night. A jet that tried to land at the same airport had to circle around and make another approach after a helicopter approached its flight path. The Washington Post reported that an audio recording from air traffic control captured the encounter, and ultimately Republic Airlines 4514 landed safely, flight tracking software shows. Oh, isn't it nice, all this transparency? And with that, interesting here. What do we have often when we have near misses lately? We have safety stand downs. I don't think that they're afforded that luxury in the airline industry because, one, you know, what are you going to do? Shut down the airport for an hour while you have a safety meeting? Maybe one of the things that they're going to look at is how do they communicate these things? Right? I don't know. What's that? I don't know. We'll see what this is. I'm sure a lot of things will come out, and there's a lot of rush to get first here. All different things. We'll share tomorrow the when we get a more complete list of people, we'll mention them. That's one of the things that is out there. Everyone forgets that there are 60 people roughly, that lost their lives. That's 60 families. Potentially that have to deal with this situation. It's a horrible situation to deal with. And we're going to go right now to our patriotic tribute that we have every night. We're going to honor the, and I'm going to ask everybody to remember the victims and everything else of this airline disaster, and we are going to be playing the national anthem in their honor tonight.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
Caught in a whirlwind, trapped, but it's fine. Regulation love keeps our air pure and divine. Blindfolded by trust, we're in compliance. Heartbeats synchronize in perfect alliance. We laugh through these masks, blending our air. Oxygen of affection flowing, we dare. No need to escape when love's our confined space. Each inhale, a promise, no need to chase.